You're listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send me a text, please, 2057. Email me, inbox at realitycheck.radio. Oh, how do I do this? Tough times make for heroes and heroines. And we've been through a tough time, still are in a tough time. And we have New Zealand's number one heroine, Linda Wharton, joining us. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Rodney. You always give me such accolades when you introduce me, and I never quite feel worthy of them because there are so many of us doing things.
That's because you have such humility, which again makes you so wonderful. I mean, you can't escape it. And I love it that you're optimistic and you radiate hope. Things that you do, your optimism and your radiance of hope. I should tell listeners, I have admired Linda from afar, but she came and stayed with us for 2 or 3 days. She and her husband are the most wonderful couple you could ever hope to meet. We were distraught when they left.
So were we, Rodney.
My children miss them.
Oh.
Their children miss you.
Your kids are so adorable. We talk about them. They're great. Being with you guys and your children was honestly one of the high points of our
this mutual love. But if you say nice things about my children, you're my friend forever.
Okay.
Because I love my kids.
Yeah.
Tell me. You've been on this trip around the South. I've got lots to talk about. You've been on this trip around the South Island.
We have.
What's
indeed.
It been like?
Oh, Rodney, it has honestly exceeded any hope or expectations I had. I have to say I was the driver for this. I was the gypsy and the initiator and the presser and the cajoler of my darling hubby. But once he agreed to it and we did the legwork, finding the caravan, getting a car that could tow it, getting here. He and I have not looked back. We've had, we've been here almost a year. We did go back for several weeks over Christmas to see family, but other than that, we've been here a year. But sadly, we're on countdown to the ferry. We only have 5 more days left in the real New Zealand, which is, of course, the South Island.
Is that how you feel?
Oh, 100%. Honestly, Rodney, if I didn't have all my loved ones in Auckland and Hamilton area, I would seriously live in the South Island. I've completely fallen in love with it. Well, okay, so I've been trying to find out. I've been asking myself, why is that? And I have to say that our experience of this year has, of course, not been the typical experience of somebody just coming to tour the South Island, because we have been enveloped in the most immense love and gratitude and support from the Freedom Community, from, Health Forum and VFF members that have followed my work for the last 3 years. And so we've literally moved around almost the entirety of the South Island, going from one beacon of light, being welcomed in and hugged and loved
everywhere you go.
Love, so much love. It's so much food, Rodney. When I go home, man, I've got to do something about the food intake, because food is the universal love language of the South Island. And it's usually home kill and organic homegrown vegetables and beautiful home baking. So we've loved everything about it. So I asked myself, how much of falling in love with the South Island is the experience of the communion that we've had with the people, and how much of it is the place itself? And I can't really quantify it out. So without doubt, the people, spectacular. The place itself, I love so many things. Obviously, the natural beauty. You can't come to the South Island and not fall in love with the natural beauty. I love that it's so different. You get in the car and you drive 2 hours into a new kind of zone of the South Island, and all the scenery changes. You know, you go from jagged mountains to flat valleys to crashing waves on the west coast and rocky beaches. So huge variety. It's like traveling like around many different countries in one in the South Island. I love that we can drive for 30 minutes in the car with the caravan and not see another car. It's like, where are the people? It's so deserted. So I love that. The weather has been so kind to us in the whole year. We've had maybe two and a half weeks where it's consistently rained. And other than that, it's just better been weather. An odd day.
Oh, it's better weather.
Without question. Auckland definitely has, the climate has changed. I'm not saying it's climate change, you know, global freezing or warming, but it has changed. It's a lot more subtropical and we do get a lot more rain, windy, grey winters. So I'm in love and I'm kind of a little bit grieving that we're going back to the supposed mainland in 5 days.
But you've got your caravan.
Yeah, we have. That's
so
right.
So you can always come back.
And I know how to find the South Island again. So never say never. We will be back, I'm sure.
And your dog is called Matilda Short and Tilly. She's called Tilly.
Yeah.
How did she find it?
Well, we kind of wondered how she'd adjust to it, really. I mean, she's little. You know, a lot of people, listeners will know who we call a therapy pup. That's my name for her. But she's little, but she's also quite mighty, so very protective of us. And when she hears unusual noises, it did take us quite a while to teach her not to bark at every single little strange noise around the caravan. But she's really cool now. She's not anxious about moving anymore, and she just takes it in stride.
Isn't it funny?
Loves all the new sniffs everywhere we go. She loves that.
I'm not a pet person, at all, but I'm looking after the neighbor's cat who's away, and this poor cat has me sort of empathizing and sympathizing with her because she's so lonely. And I find my heart going out to this cat and I'm thinking, God, I am a pet person. You know what I mean? Because as soon as you look, it's like a baby. Once you start looking after it, you just fall in love.
Yeah. And totally. Yeah, you can be not a pet person until somebody forces their pet on you. And you start to go, you get their character and their personality, and that's when the connection starts. Yeah.
Now, no doubt you would have been amazed at the outpouring of love and support for you.
I have been truly humbled by it, Rodney. Honestly, I mean, I obviously receive emails and lovely messages that encourage me and buoy me up over time. But to be on the road so consistently, and of course, doing all the speaking events that I've been doing, so it's completely different when you're in a room of people who are sharing their stories with you and hugging you, and you know, the kind of intimacy, the emotion and the words of love and affirmation from them. I'll never forget it, honestly.
Never.
I feel my love tank is so full. I'm going home so buoyed up.
Yeah. And of course for us, it's sort of been a life and death experience.
Sadly, yes, genuinely that for some people. Yeah.
Yes. And sometimes not literally, sometimes literally, yes, but
literally.
It's been so deep. And then through this, you have been this beacon. And you have become this point of contact for us. And you've done a great job because you've kept your mind.
Oh, sort of, most days, because, not every day.
I mean, that deserves a prize.
Who would have thought, eh, Rodney? But that's something, you know, being on the ground with real people in all of these places, the people we're staying with in every place, but also the venues where I've been speaking, sometimes to quite big groups, you know, 100, 120 people in a room. What I realise without a shadow of a doubt is that even though we're 4 years on now, over 4 years on from the start of, you know, the inverted commas pandemic, it's just so not over for people.
No.
There is just a world of hurt still. I don't know quite what I expected, but I wonder at what point, you know, where is that line where we cross over it and we say, oh, it's done now, it's finished, we're healed, it's over, because we're not there yet, and it's 4 years, so I don't know where, you know, I don't know when we get to that line.
It's such a peculiar thing. It's so outside our own experience. It's sort of like you've been through a war and the war's ended and everyone is saying, oh, what war? There was no war.
Yeah.
And you're saying, what?
So there's that whole gaslighting aspect, because ordinarily in a real war,
yes,
you know, First World War, Second World War, the whole country.
Even the Vietnam War, while they were treated badly, yeah, no one doubted there was a war.
There was really a war, and people were allowed to be broken by it and,
yes,
you know, acknowledged. And then I guess the community and the nation as a whole healed from that, moved forward together, united. Those kind of wars, well, maybe not so much the Vietnam War, because there was obviously, yes, protests, yes, about whether or not we should have been there, whether it not or not it should have been happening as well. But the thing is that how we are now in New Zealand now, we've got the subpopulation of hundreds of thousands, probably millions of people who have been through a war. And then the other part of the country who have been largely unscathed by it, and they don't feel like they've been through a war, and they're now, you know, moving on, it's over. I get people saying sometimes on my post, you know, why are you still banging on about this? Mm. Can't you just get a life? It's over. But that's what I have seen and felt being traveling the South Island is, for so many people, it's not over. And I guess you call it PTSD. That's, yes, what it is. It's PTSD. And there's no kind of easy off switch for that.
The media, the politicians and the bureaucrats, put them to one side. And my little circle, which is a very small circle, you know, kids, friends, parents sort of thing, standing on the sports field, that sort of circle. I detect a shift where they look back on it and say it was wrong. And I am shocked at the number of people I now know who attribute a sickness and disease to the jab.
Wow.
Like saying, oh, yeah, no, I got a heart problem. I think it was a jab. Mm. And these were people who were indifferent or enthusiastic. Are you picking that up too? Like, absent the leaders, just amongst, yeah, people, like one by one, it's almost like a one by one that eyes are awakening, or am I misreading it?
No, I don't think you are. I think we've got two things happening. We've got the agenda, the official narrative that is still rolled out, you know, that safe and effective still, and that, you know, these vaccine injured people, they don't really exist, or if they do exist, there's only a tiny, tiny, it's very rare, there's a tiny, yeah, number of them. We've got that. And, of course, we've got the media with the blindfolds on, you know, looking the other way. But then I agree with you that on the ground, just ordinary people are much more open to the discussion. You know, we talk about this everywhere we go. Actually, mostly it's Craig, my husband, who is much more willing to strike up this conversation with perfect strangers, you know, standing in queues in the supermarket or wherever. I'm the introvert, he's the extrovert. He's a lot more willing to do that. And what I found fascinating is, having been with him and been a part of those conversations all around the South Island with people who are not within the freedom community, we haven't had any pushback from anyone. People have been quite interested. They've never heard of the health forum, but they, you know, we've been telling them about we're speaking, and they say, "Oh, what are you speaking about?" So of course that's, you know, that's the road in. And we've had nobody anywhere rude to us or call us anti-vaxxers. And I think all but the most diehard ostriches, all but the most diehard ostriches are starting to see changes in the people around them, you know, more sickness than usual or serious sickness or sickness in the wrong demographics. Young, healthy, athletic people suddenly finding out they've got some kind of a cardiac issue or an arrhythmia. So I do think that I wouldn't call it a groundswell, but I think it's a gentle unfolding.
One by one. I'll tell you an interesting thing. I think what you observed too is a great feature of Kiwis. You know, in my entire time in politics, I never had anyone rude to me.
Oh, that's astounding, Rodney.
I know. Never.
Wow.
And online, letters to the editor, and emails to me, I'd get terrible abuse.
Oh, okay. Right, now I get it. You mean face-to-face, in person.
Face-to-face.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's just such a... We're such a easygoing people. We don't do confrontation well. Mm. And then I've even had that experience of bumping into people who were politically active and therefore at events, who had been sending me dreadful emails. And then I'd meet them. And it's actually, you're not such a bad person. Now, you know, they'd actually be genuinely nice. There's something about that anonymity or even when you're putting your name down. Yeah.
Keyboard warriors.
And when blogs first became a thing, I had the first political blog in New Zealand.
Wow.
As I recall, 2000, 2001, I don't recall what date. I had to shut it down.
Because
I couldn't stand it. I could not stand it.
The hate mail?
I couldn't stand it. Mm. I'd get up in the morning and I'd check my blog, and it only take one person to write nasty stuff, and you think, what is wrong with you? Right? And the nastiness. And, of course, this was mild compared to what it is now.
Mm.
But I couldn't function with it. I literally couldn't function. And I never, ever got that. And I'd be walking through cafes, down the street, through airports, everywhere politicians goes, right? They're all over the place. You're walking there. There's nowhere. Yeah. Schools.
And you're sitting next to random strangers on airplanes that recognise you.
Never, ever, ever seen it. And never even had it shouted across the street. Which is so peculiar.
Really surprising. I mean, it's both one of the charms of our national character. It's charming to not be abused by people on the street, right?
Yes.
It's lovely. It's both one of the charms, but also almost an Achilles heel at the same time. The fact
We
don't speak up. That's right. That makes us, that feeds into the whole compliance that we've witnessed in the last 4 years.
And it's been like that for a long, long time, because the Karl Popper observed, he was here during World War II, and he said the New Zealanders are the best governed country he'd ever been to, but also the most easily governed.
Ah, oh, that interesting statement.
People took that as a compliment, but it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
because we are very easily governed.
Yeah.
And of course, I think you'll be with me on this one too, that it's shifting in other countries much more than here.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I kind of wonder what it takes to crack open the shell of the national character here, because as you know, my biggest social media presence now with the Health Forum is actually on Twitter or X, which of course is very much a global platform. So the audience I'm speaking to and with are all over the world on X. And so I get a real, and I'm following people all over the world. So I get a real sense of the evolution happening in other countries. And I look at New Zealand and honestly, I do feel a sense of despair sometimes. I just wonder what it takes here. Although, interestingly, the countries where the population is starting to really vocalize that something dire has happened and that we've been manipulated, those countries are also the countries where the mainstream media is now speaking about what's happened.
Yes.
America, New York Times article about a month ago, Japan, several mainstream TV programs, Germany, Switzerland, UK, you know, there's all these different countries, Australia, Sky News. So I look at my global, the people I'm following globally and what's happening in their their mainstream media, and the mainstream media are shifting. They've allowed a little gap for just starting the conversation about what's happening. And as a result of that, they're still so influential. And the populations are changing within the country as a result of being given permission to start talking about the subject. Well, here we're completely impenetrable still to this very day, completely impenetrable in terms of any mainstream media conversation about what's happened with mandates, ethics, Bill of Rights, vaccine injury, those kind of things.
Mm. When you compare our media to overseas on this topic alone, we seem extremely provincial. Our legacy media sort of read like a little community newspaper now.
They really do.
Road accidents and someone's upset, someone diddled someone, someone's fallen out of love, someone's got a surprise announcement, some celebrity, and that's it. No deep presentation even of the news. If you wanted to discover what was happening in the Middle East, you couldn't do it with the Herald.
No.
If you wanted to discover what was happening with the pandemic treaty or where we are with COVID, couldn't get it from there. It's just not possible. Now, we've got a lot to talk about.
Mm.
I liked it when you told us at the speech that you gave. And by the way, it was a wonderful, wonderful speech.
Thank you.
And if anyone gets a chance to go along and hear Linda Wharton, do so. I also have to say, I went along and heard Penny Marie and Elizabeth Cave speak on Let Kids Be Kids. Oh my goodness, what a wonderful presentation.
They're doing the most amazing job. Penny and I sort of followed each other around the South Island.
Yes.
We were just kind of 1 or 2 days apart from each other doing the same track.
And then last week I went along and heard Dr. Sarah Farrant, who's an osteopath who speaks on my show regularly. All three presentations were wonderful. And each time I went along thinking, oh, well, look, I follow them. I've interviewed them. I know all about what they're going to say. And each time I learned such a lot,
which
is interesting.
So
if you're listening and you get the chance to hear Linda or any of the aforementioned speakers, do go, because there's something about a presentation when you're in the room. Now, I liked it because you can't go into details, and I don't want you to. I don't want you to reveal your sources. I just want your confidence. Because you said you felt confident that the inquiry would be a good one. And that was all you could say. And if it wasn't a good one, you would have been dreadfully misled, which I can understand too. Are you still of that view?
I still have great hope that the right thing is going to happen in terms of a significant broadening and deepening of the terms of reference for the New Zealand COVID inquiry. I still have real hope that's going to happen. And I, unless I have been very much misled, I do have faith that safety is the safety and the harm wrought by the vaccine is going to be a part of the new inquiry. So,
and of course, if it isn't, I had this thought yesterday, we're more than capable of organising a parallel inquiry.
Well, but that is actually already happening. So I am not a part of it, but Billy Takahia and Matt King, who was Democracy NZ, and some other people are currently travelling around New Zealand, holding public events, video recording people's testimonies. Yeah, that so they have the New Zealand version of the Canadian People's COVID Inquiry, which was a huge so that was a huge deal over there in Canada, and they have now published a document that's I downloaded it the other day and just about fell off my chair when I opened it. It's about 5,000 pages long, I believe. It's a huge, huge document. And so Billy Takahia and Matt and somebody else who I can't remember, I'm very sorry for the third person, are doing this right now. So, maybe you need to follow that up, Rodney.
How would I find that?
Well, I guess you contact Billy TK. I don't know. Actually a part of it. So
no, I'll do that because that sounds wonderful. We'll put them on the show. Because that suggests to me that they're real. Because I wondered, you know, when you're heading into an election, people say all sorts of things.
Yes.
But it's what they do after the election. And if they're doing that, they're
really doing
it.
They're really doing it. They've had quite a few meetings already.
Oh, no, we've got to get onto that. I did not know.
Great.
Now, tell me why we're living in two movies. I got this upsetting email from a regular listener, Tony, and he'd written off to people in power, MPs that had recently left, and said, look, here's all the evidence. Why can't you see this? And he's persistent.
Good on him.
But they just came back and basically said, look, not our thing. And so his question to me was, how is it possible that our media and our government and our public institutions can be so blind to what we see and we know, or are we the ones totally misled?
Great question. So from where I stand, because I am not an academic, I'm not, you know, a vaccinologist being sponsored by Otago University or whatever, or an epidemiologist, I'm just a person on the, you know, the grassroots on the front line, actually connecting with real live human beings who have been harmed. I know without, you know, one iota of doubt that the harm is real. I do not believe we to this day fully know the extent of the harm. I think there are many people in New Zealand who themselves do not realise that the change in their health has got anything to do with, you know, the experimental gene therapy that they took 1 year or 2 years ago, and suddenly they have a, you know, a new onset severe autoimmune disease or whatever it is. So I think there are a lot of people just laboring under the misconception that for some reason their health has just got a lot worse and they're not putting those two things together. But I have no doubt. You know, I see it. It's my world every day.
And yet, supposedly, our agency is responsible for health statistics. Our agency is responsible for monitoring and evaluating policy. Our politicians, our medical profession, and our media can't.
Or won't.
Or won't.
And I don't know if you've noticed that in the last few months there have been quite a few different articles and stuff, and the Herald in particular I've noticed, oh, and also Radio New Zealand, where they're blathering on about the dire state of our healthcare system, especially our emergency departments and hospitals. Mm-hmm. And they interview, you know, they have soundbite little snippet quotes from some ED specialist or whatever, and they're all saying things like they don't know what's happened, they've never been so busy, you know, it's almost become a daily thing to have ambulances ramped, you know, parked at the ramps as extra treatment rooms. And I've seen two articles in the last 3 or 4 weeks where the person being interviewed in the ED is talking about the unusual complexity of the cases that are coming in, that they're not emergency medicine type things. They're very serious, rare, complex, you know, all the buzzwords. So they are noticing that something is changing. They're just not verbalizing, you know, the elephant in the room. What's the other thing that's changed?
Yes.
13.1 million doses of, you know, genetic medicine.
And their mind and their position and their organization can't let them think it, let alone say it.
No.
So,
because number one, they know their job is at risk if they speak. But also, number two, if you have worked within healthcare or any of the various ancillary arms that were involved in organizing, rolling out, and actually administering the vaccine, how do you start to verbalize that you may have done the wrong thing or you may have actively caused harm to people? It's a big hurdle to get over.
Well, our danger is we sound like cuckoos.
Yeah. Where's Sean this morning? Sean!
Yeah, we're cuckoos. Because hitherto, it's very hard to believe there'd be this level of cognitive dissonance or cowardice, because, and I'm thinking that's what it is, it's a cowardice. I think people in these institutions, I've come to realize, don't have a principle in the lot of them. And in this last little while, we've been seriously tested on whether you've got principles or not.
Yeah.
Because the nonsense that goes down in our schools with gender ideology, the nonsense that goes down in our courtrooms and legal rooms with treaty-based race thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone with an ounce of principle for education, for the law, for our health, would be blowing the whistle. Now, they've done a great job at showing what happens to you if you do blow the whistle.
Yes.
But a person of courage and principle speaks the truth without being concerned for the consequence to them.
Mm.
We're not seeing any of that.
No, we're seeing very little, aren't we? Do you think it's partly because we've had it too good for too long in New Zealand? It's been a long time since the Second World War, and we've just been the land of milk and honey, and it's been peaceful, and we've trusted our government, and you know, we haven't lived through genocides or invasions of other countries, you know, into our land.
For sure.
And we've perhaps been progressively weakened.
Well, it's funny you say this. We're getting off the topic, but it's wonderful because Elizabeth Cave gave a presentation along with Penny Marie on the Let Kids Be Kids.
Yeah.
And her presentation has stayed with me. It was so good, I went to hear it the next night. I heard it here in Arrowtown and then went over to Wanaka. It was so good. And I heard the same presentation for a second time and learnt more the second time, even though it was the same presentation. It was so extremely confronting. And it's been going round and round and round in my head. And it runs like this. This is what's in my head.
Mm.
We were, if you like, brainwashed, indoctrinated, or taught, or raised, choose your word, to believe in moral principles. And of doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And of delayed gratification, of virtue. And we got it with me growing up. I got it in the Boy Scouts. I got it at school, just an ordinary state school.
Mm.
I got it when I went to Sunday school. But I was surrounded by it. I'd turn on TV and there'd be a Western and you identified with the brave cowboy who'd put his guns on and go out, not knowing what he confronted, to defend his town and his wife and his family and his land and deal with the bad guys. We were brought up with Sir Ivanhoe and Robin Hood.
Yes.
Courage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I've got young children, and their culture that they're surrounded by outside of the family is selfish.
It's hedonism.
Yes. Self-absorbed.
That's the word. Yeah.
Hedonism.
Yeah. If it feels good, do it, irrespective of how it makes
No delayed gratification, no thought of another person, no principle. And I think almost everyone under 40 has been growing up in that system. And the ones that have escaped it have had very good parents and a Christian foundation. And they've escaped it. So that's one theory that I have.
Mm.
Because
we sound like a couple of rusty old dinosaurs, Rodney, but I agree with everything you've just said.
It's significant because you're trying to explain it.
Totally.
Then I think,
absolutely.
And I'm looking back on this, because I had a luxury when I was a politician. I didn't care. I didn't particularly enjoy being an MP. I found it exciting and fun.
Yeah.
But if at any day that it ended, I would have gone off whistling happy.
That's a great way to be, isn't it?
Yeah, I just didn't care for it. I mean, I didn't believe in it in a funny way. I just thought it was so much madness here. And so I was always doing, I always made myself do one thing that risked my career, so-called. Because, you can't do that, yada, yada, you'll be a
shooting
star.
Living on the edge a little bit. Yeah. Pushing the boundaries.
I didn't care.
Yeah.
And I always tried hard to do what was right without a personal regard to me, because that's how we were brought up. But I think back on it, and I think about it, if you believed in it, or if you believed in the government department, or you believed in the system, you join the health department, you join the education department, you become a school teacher, you become a nurse. Everything is about protecting the system. And bit by bit, you lose your individuality.
Your autonomy, your independent thought.
Your ability to speak out, your ability to question is stripped away these days. And as long as you're doing what you're told and you're following what's written down as policy and someone above you has okayed it, you're fine.
Yeah, you have job security. Yeah. You can go, and you just run in your little tracks without giving what you're doing too much independent thought. You just follow the script and the manual for how you perform.
And so maybe those progressing through that system know full well that the system is everything. As Penny Marie would say, the policy is everything and people come second. And it's implicit in the model.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, of course, the last 4 years, I would say many hundreds of thousands, if not, over 1 million people in New Zealand see that now because of what we've lived through, and they have lost all faith in the model and the system.
Mm-hmm.
I meet people everywhere who just avow that they're never going to go see a doctor again.
No.
They'll die at home. On their farm or in the field or
that's me.
Wherever. They're finished with modern medicine. That's you, is it, Rodney?
Yes.
Yeah.
If I broke an arm or stabbed myself, and needed stitches or whatever. But I can't imagine. I used to sort of go to the doctor if I felt unwell.
Right. No. And I've even met women on this trip who themselves or friends of them have free birthed their babies.
Yes, my
goodness. They don't want the midwives involved, the doctors involved. And I'm not saying this is the right thing. There's a high degree of risk for mother and baby doing that. I'm not advocating that. I'm just illustrating the degree of brokenness of trust.
And lack of respect.
Yeah.
I don't respect them. How can I respect them? Because
neither do I.
They ran government policy over the top of me, their client, their customer, their paying customer. Right? They would refuse to see me. Because I hadn't had the jab, all those sorts of things. Wear a mask. Even though you could have the brain of a hedgehog and still figure out a mask was a waste of time, they all went for it. Hand sanitizer for a respiratory disease.
Yeah.
What planet do they think they're on?
Maybe shares in the company, the hand sanitizer company.
I just think they go, it's just so... It's this Kiwi thing, easily governed. Just go along with it. Go along with it. Come on, Rodney, go along. Come on, Linda, get on board. Just go along with it.
Yeah. It with the passage of time and the increasing flow of information globally around the true nature of harms that we've lived through, it becomes harder and harder to forgive people who are working within the system and staying silent. The medical system in particular I'm talking about, hospitals, specialist doctors. I spoke in a small town about a week ago, and one of the people in the audience I won't mention the town because I want to protect this person's identity, and it was a small town. But one of the people in the audience came to spoke to me afterwards, and she is a GP, and she commented, shared with me that all the medical centres in the small town are absolutely overwhelmed with a huge number of patients. They're not coping, and that they that she personally is witnessing in her practice a change in a noticeable change in the types of illnesses that she's having to deal with. So a lot of serious advanced and rare cancers, noticeably increased from any other time in her career. She's a middle-aged lady. And she's awake to it. She gets what's happening. And she shared that with me.
And, of course, there's nothing she can do with that information.
No, that's why she came and spoke to me. I guess she felt she was doing something with that information by sharing it with me.
A great honour that she so trusted you, because if she either... There's no effective way other than for her to resign her position and speak out. And she'll be saying, well, I've got my patients to look after.
And one less GP on the ground in a small town that's already slammed with too many patients to care for.
And bit by bit, they've got us. One of the things that fascinates me. I'm a great fan of X. I don't even let the T word out of my mouth. If Elon Musk wants to call it X, I'll call it X. Even though it sort of trips you up because you say, oh, I read this on X and it sounds a bit funny, or you can't say I tweeted. You got to say I X'd or I posted.
It's but bizarre, isn't it?
It's a talking point. I love X. I follow people like yourself, Penny Marie, and I'm just kept abreast of it.
It's where the real news is. The real news is, and breaking news and everything.
I follow the Israeli
Defense
Force, you know, and then I read the comments, and oftentimes you think, oh, no, that's not quite right because the comments are pointing that out, X, Y, Z.
Yes, instant. That's what I do too. You get an instant critique of the post in the comments, don't you?
It's the most wonderful thing ever. And I don't need to watch the news because the news, if something happens, it pops up on X. And I don't have to sit through Jack Tame interviewing the Minister of Education in case she might say something, because when she does say something, Bob McCoskrie or Penny Marie will exit for me, you know?
Yeah.
And say, oh, look at this. And then I don't even have to watch it. I can just read what she said. It's so wonderful.
And of course, you know, most of the voices that are on there, well, many of the voices, of course, you get to choose who you follow, but many of the voices are citizen journalists. They're people like me who aren't being paid and don't belong to an organization, you know, a mainstream organization. And we're free to say whatever we want to say. Whereas, you know, it's different to following the TVNZ Facebook page or something where you're confined within the boundaries of their agenda and their narrative.
It's the true use of the internet in the sense that you've got everyone able to have a voice, every voice able to be critiqued and corrected, and floating to the top isn't the propaganda, but floating to the top are the people that are worth following.
That's right.
And sometimes you'll follow a topic for a while and then lose interest and you drop that person, or that person goes off the boil and you drop them. I find it amazing that I can follow Elon Musk.
Yes.
And I have this richest man in the world, most amazing entrepreneur ever, most in many ways most exciting person, and he posts on X I don't know, a dozen times a day up to, and you're reading his posts, or he's pointing you to things that he finds interesting. You think, well, if he finds it interesting, I'm going to read this.
Yeah, but no, it's, when could it's great. You
ever have access to an Elon Musk?
That's right. And, you know, and also I totally agree with you, but also like when I put posts up, when many people put posts up, they tag people into the posts, which gives the other person a notification that the post has gone up. And so, you know, I tag in Winston Peters and David Seymour and Shane Retty and, you know, the people I want to see specific posts talking about something to do with vaccine harm or data or a new peer-reviewed paper that's come out. And you can bet all those people will have social media teams. You know, they'll have people that are looking at the tags and the notifications.
So when you tag them on your post, even though they may not be following you, that'll pop up in their feed?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
They'll still get to, you can tag somebody and it will be a notification for them, even if they're not already following you.
And I've always imagined, whenever I've experienced social media until X came along, it was always heavily biased left and Head and Sound. I guess we had a Labor government too.
Mm-hmm.
But now I notice any little bit of nonsense, like MPs will post something, or media personalities even better, they post something, they'll get 300 comments in a row slamming them for being stupid and why they're wrong. And you're looking at that and say, don't they get this? And I actually love that.
The comments are so juicy.
I do
have wry little smiles because, you know, I'll be on Twitter or on X or Facebook and I'll see, you know, Michael Baker with his latest proclamations around how we all need to mask up again. And I just can't help it. I have to read the comments.
Every one of them.
just slammed. Absolutely slammed.
Well, he's
slammed.
A great example, right?
Yeah.
He will post something and there'll be 300 people slamming him. You know, you were
and
wrong.
And three
Why
people
don't you go
saying,
away?
you're right, yeah. Michael, I've got my new masks, three people.
Doesn't he get the feedback?
Well, he gets the feedback, but he's part of the structure, isn't he? You know, he's Otago University and he's the spokesman of the government.
He's a doctor.
Tell
me, how do you manage social media? Because I've got an addictive personality, right?
Mm. So have I.
And I could easily, I never post. I've got an anonymous account and I just follow people.
Yeah.
And I love it. But I can readily sit down to have a cup of tea, pick up my phone like an automaton, start scrolling, and an hour passes.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Social media eats your life. You get a dopamine hit with every little, and especially when you're the one that's doing the posting.
Oh, God, I can imagine.
You get a dopamine hit.
Yes, really I can imagine. Yeah. And every comment, how do you manage that with your day? Because I spent time with you and you were very at peace and had time and you weren't on your phone.
So how I manage it, well, for example, in this last year when we've been living in the caravan and traveling, we have jointly made a conscious decision to keep up our respective work, but also have a quality life. And a quality life means time away from screens, time in nature, walking, connecting with people, being tourists, seeing new things. So we've actually got a structure. We get up at 7 in the morning and we work till usually 1 in the afternoon. So people will notice that I do most of my posting in the morning, and then we'll usually have the rest of the afternoon off from 1 till after dinner, and then I do a couple more hours in the evening, catch up on emails, do a bit more posting before I go to bed. with my blue light filter on the screen. So it doesn't keep me quite so awake when I finally get into bed. Yeah, so we actually have created a structure. It's like we've scheduled. Oh, it's 1 o'clock, right, tools down, boom, out of here. Because it,
oh, good for you.
If I didn't do that, if I was on my own and I didn't have a schedule, my day would just disappear and it would just
because you put up a post and you think, oh, I wonder what someone said now. Oh, that's nasty. I just find myself, oh yeah, they mentioned that person. Who was that person again? And then they were in a movie. Oh yeah, what was that movie about? You know, you just go on and on and on and on and on and on.
Clicking through there, investigating that, clicking through.
And then I say, where'd that out go? What did I learn? Oh, I can't quite remember, but it was something interesting. next thing, final thing really, is so much. I just we're having more of a conversation than an interview.
Yeah.
But
very conversational.
Tell me about this. Two questions, actually. The athletes.
Well,
you've got a great thing where each day you update us on around the world, the young, fit, invariably men fall over dead. Professional sports people.
Mm.
What's going on? Is that real?
Well, about probably 4 months ago, maybe, every day when I was on Twitter, I'd be scrolling through my feed and I would see, you know, maybe half a dozen news stories coming up about exactly what you said, young, fit, often professional athletes, you know, at the peak. Who were announcing that their career was over because they had a blood clot or they had a new cardiac arrhythmia or died suddenly, a lot of those as well. And so I decided to start a thread where I asked the question, what is happening to athletes? You know, is it the elephant in the room? And so I started collecting them all together and I would do it every day. And at the beginning, I'd add maybe four articles in a day. And of late, it's got up to some days, 12, 14 new news stories to add. And I have a very dear friend who is a retired doctor who keeps close tabs on me. And we talked about this thread and I shared with her that it was actually the hardest part of my day and that I feel quite physically unwell after I've done that, and because there's so many new news stories, it can take me half an hour to add them to the thread. We've got hundreds and hundreds of people on this thread, and she convinced me about a week ago to stop doing it, to not do it anymore, not dwell in the died suddenly space because it was making me feel physically unwell, you know. So I haven't updated it. When I see the stories, I'm still just putting them in a folder, but I'm not updating the thread. I'm having a wee breather. It's so real. It's so real. It's global. You know, of course, Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Asim Malhotra, who are both cardiologists who use their platform to call for an immediate withdrawal of COVID mRNA injections, they both say staunchly that the died suddenlies in young, fit people, be they athletes or just young, fit people, and if they're vaccinated, there must be a causal connection with the injection taken into account and considered as the cause until proven otherwise.
Yes.
So died suddenly in young, fit and healthy, if they were vaccinated, they're saying it's the mRNA injection, unless proven otherwise.
Yes, and this is a coronial inquest and pathologist report, and they say, oh, look, they had a hidden heart
injection or something like that. Unless proven otherwise.
Otherwise,
there's
no
completely flipped
explanatory variable. They have been heroes, those two.
Oh, I just do not know how they do it. Honestly, they are absolute. They're supermen. They fly around the world.
Supermen.
They're constantly moving on aeroplanes, and not so much Peter McCullough because he is very much in practice every day seeing patients, but he's got more interview hours than anybody I know of through the whole last 4 years. Yeah.
And he's still going at it.
He's still going. He looks exhausted. I do worry for his health, but he's still going. Yeah.
Well, I imagine he would have thought he'd see the end of it by now.
Yes. Didn't we all? And Peter's now started to talk about H5N1, of course.
Yes.
Because he's living in America, which is kind of ground zero for a ramping up of fear around bird flu. And just 3 days ago, the CDC posted that they're in talks with Moderna and Pfizer to create mRNA COVID injections for the new bird flu.
I saw that on X.
Yep. Oh, you saw it on X, of course.
Finally, is there a sense that the excess mortality and the disease occasioned by the vaccine, so-called vaccine, jab, is waning as time passes? Or is there an underlying rate? Is it still occurring? Is it increasing? What's your expectation?
Yeah, so the experts who have spent their time honestly studying the mechanisms of harm for the mRNA injections, they're saying that basically there's two waves of mortality. So there's the front-loaded, like if you look at the vaccine adverse event reporting system in America, their global reporting, you'll see their death reports are very front-loaded, you know, to the first 2 days in particular, and then strongly the first week post-injection. So there's that mortality that's front-loaded. But then there's a long, slow tail that starts to rise again at about 6 months post-dose. And so there's a longer, slower, more chronic, insidious mechanism of harm that leads to the slower later deaths as well. So,
and presumably heart damage
cancer, and autoimmune diseases and cancer,
they can be long too. 5 years time, 10 years time.
Yeah, they can be. And
makes me convinced I'm not a cooker is this. Be the easiest thing in the world for a government to say, here are the records for the jabbed, here are the records for the unjabbed. Easily done.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the
with no confounding of putting unvaccinated in with single dose vaccinated, which is how we've had our statistics.
Yeah.
Confounded. You can't work
everywhere
out.
Everywhere they
really
go,
happening.
They mess it up. Yeah. They deliberately mess up the stats. And that tells me I'm not a cooker.
Mm.
Because it's not been transparent. The data has not been provided. And there hasn't been an audit.
That's right. And they
haven't
released.
That's all you need to know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's enough. And, for example, the whistleblower situation that we've had in New Zealand, the Barry Young data, they could have actually made that go away by releasing that data.
Yes.
Anonymized. To prove that what he's saying is completely wrong.
No.
I'm not saying what he's saying is completely wrong. What I'm saying is, wouldn't the obvious thing to do be to release the anonymized data to the world and end of story? Look, what he's saying is completely wrong. Here's the data.
No, what they had to do was, we can't let this become a pattern. So we have to take this one whistleblower and send armed police officers, I think they were armed, to his house.
There were eight of them.
Eight to his house and arrest him. And we're going to make such an example of him that anyone contemplating such a thing will never do it.
That's exactly right. That's how we operate here. And unfortunately, that's exactly what Liz Gunn is going through right now.
Yes, indeed.
With her assault charges. You know, anybody that has seen that video, it clearly wasn't assault. There was actually only one assault, and that was, well, two, Liz and the cameraman being assaulted by the police officers who took 10 seconds and 18 seconds to communicate before throwing them to the ground. So they're being made an example of as well.
But isn't that strange? Because implicated then, sort with Posey Parker, another field, another topic, the police, the courts, the judges, everyone. And it's like open season on anyone who departs from the narrative, questions the narrative, and the total destruction with the full force of the state of anyone on the inside who steps out of line.
Yeah, totalitarianism, right?
Right amongst us.
Yeah.
And if you ever wondered what side you'd be on, if you're in occupied Holland, when it came to the Jews, we're finding out.
Yep.
Because you're either standing up for Barry Young or Liz Gunn, or you're not. And it's very clear they're being hunted.
And also, what is also very clear is that whenever I post, I did a long post about Liz Gunn, including the videos on X and Facebook, and they are completely throttled posts. They have gone nowhere. They're completely throttled. You know, I often get...
So how does all this work, throttled and not throttled?
Well, okay, so this is what happens on X. We have this platform that we're told is a free speech platform. And then shortly after Elon Musk bought the platform, he employed a CEO, Linda, what's her name?
She was suspect from the get-go.
So she's got strong WEF ties, that lady. But anyway, so she's CEO, and she came out at the beginning and said, yes, you will have freedom of speech, just not freedom of reach. So if you say something that's deemed unpopular, whatever it is, you will have your post throttled. And I've worked out what happens. So what happens to my posts on X is if I write something that is damning of the government, like I do a lot of posts on OIAs, I'm putting up a lot of screenshots of OIAs and things that are directly damning of the New Zealand government response through the last 4 years, right? I can guarantee now that within minutes of me putting that up, I will get somebody in the thread. I call them pawn bots. So it's a supposed follower, somebody that jumps onto my thread, and their handle, their tag is like a porn picture, like bare breasts or whatever. And it suddenly pops up on my thread. Now, they've tagged my thread with that, because what happens then is the algorithm sees that in my thread and downgrades the viability of my thread because it's breaking community standards, it's adult content, and it stops it dead in its track. It goes nowhere. And so I have to watch my thread so closely, because as soon as I put something up that is an OIA, or I write about Liz Gunn and I put up the videos of the assault, and I write in my usual moderate way. I'm not calling for anybody to be hanged, and I'm not shouting about Nuremberg. I'm just like, here's the evidence, you decide, here's the evidence. And boom, straight away, it just is stopped in its tracks. even when I find those porn bot things and I delete them, often.
So you can delete comments on your.
You can block them. Yeah, you can block and delete. But often the damage is done. It still just doesn't take off. After
and
they've
when
been
you
on
say
there.
It doesn't take off, it's not reposted.
You don't get views. So it's not posted in people, it's not shared in people's threads. You know, when I put a post up, Twitter shares it out into various people's threads.
So I'll see it because I follow you.
If you follow me and you've clicked the notification button so that you will always be notified, you'll see it. But so many people that follow me never see my posts. They tell me that I never see you in my newsfeed ever. I have to literally go to your profile to look at what you've posted. So there's still a lot of machination.
And funnily enough, this isn't necessarily X throttling you.
No.
Other than that they have a throttle on porn,
That's right.
But there are actors out there, paid or otherwise, who are following you and know how to throttle your post and will do so.
Totally, Rodney, that I've come to that. I don't believe it's Twitter related, that I don't believe it's Twitter that are tagging my posts with porn bots.
No, they wouldn't need to, would they?
I believe that because of the nature of the posts that get tagged, I do believe it's something to do with New Zealand government social media surveillance and censorship. Because I can write many things about, I can write about, you know, the WHO and the Pandemic Response Treaty. I can write about how many deaths there are in the American Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Those threads don't get tagged by porn bots. Then I post a New Zealand OIA and boom, there it is, tagged. They try and stop it in its tracks. Over and over again. This is not a whole button or two time.
You have no way of knowing who's placed that porn bot.
No way. No.
So this must be a feature all around the world on X.
But yes, many people talk about it. So many of the very big accounts, the real mover and shaker accounts, you know, with 400,000 followers and everything, they talk about a lot.
And so presumably Elon Musk could get to the bottom of who these people are. Twitter
I
must
would say
know.
So, yep.
X must know.
Oh, lots of people, you know, thousands of people are calling for him to sort it out, do something about it. It's a real blight on the platform, to be honest.
I remember the very first time I interviewed you and you said not to say the vaccine word. Was it the vaccine word or some word?
Ivermectin? It was ivermectin. Mm.
And you had to use code. And I thought, this lady's a cooker. And because who's ever heard of such a thing? I'm so naive, right? I didn't think you were a cooker because I'd never heard the phrase, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. You thought she's
I mean, sure enough, I discovered it was a thing.
It was a thing. It's still a thing. Yeah.
And it's so frightening that there's someone somewhere, and it's clearly not a third party doing it for nothing.
Oh, no. I mean, there are agencies and teams and organized social media responses, you know, watching everything I put up, recording
and
everything
I put up. It's not Big Pharma. It's actually government-sponsored agencies because it's the government ones that get the porn bot.
It is government, but also Big Pharma have
same
huge cartels of tens of thousands of people that they pay on social media to direct conversations, to push back, you know, with statistics about how safe the vaccine is.
But, I mean, it's pretty disgusting in so many levels to be throttling debate, throttling discussion, to be doing it, what, you know, and what's the word, undercover, right? So it's not open and transparent. To be doing it, it's a covert operation. And then to be using porn analogies to do it. That it, this is so disgusting. I just can't imagine that we're in such a world.
You don't think I'm a cooker anymore, do you? Because you know enough now to know that it's actually.
I know enough. I don't know any cookers sad. Because I just think I'll be there in 6 months. Keep talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But things I never believed that the jab could be harmful. I knew they couldn't know that it was safe and effective. Right. Yeah. But I'm such a naive person. I thought there's no way the corporations and the New Zealand government would put out a product that would harm people.
We've learned a lot, haven't we?
I never knew that government would censor, and we know that the New Zealand government went to Facebook to shut you and a community of 50,000 people damaged by the jab.
Yeah.
And rather than reach out to the citizens of our country who are taxpayers, who vote, who have the rights of citizenship, who followed the government advice and became injured and then ignored and then denigrated, and they form a group under your leadership on Facebook, and our government's response isn't to embarrassingly open up and admit they'd made a mistake, but our government's response was to write to Facebook to shut down this group. That is evil beyond evil beyond evil, Linda.
Yes, but our eyes, it totally is, and our eyes are wide open now. And yes. It remains to be seen, doesn't it, what happens if...
Yes, well, you know, I'm hopeful like you because you give me hope. And here's the thing. I am trying to be a good Christian, and it has so many benefits.
Yeah.
So many benefits. It gives me such an amount of love for people. It gives me such an amount of courage. But
and peace.
It gives me forgiveness. And I can forgive them. So I can forgive Michael Baker. I can forgive Jacinda Ardern. I can forgive all of them. Because if God could come to our earth as a man and die for us and forgive us, man, I can forgive these people easy.
Well, you're a great man, Rodney. My forgiveness is a work in progress.
Mm. Well, maybe I'm a bit flipped. Maybe if I saw them, I'd say something nasty. My wife says, if she saw Jacinda Ardern, she's not sure what she would do. And my wife's a very peace-loving lady. My mother would shoot her if she was still alive and saw her.
Wow.
My mother really was. Yeah. Well, I'll say I'm a work in progress. I tend to talk in extremes. I'll be a work in progress on forgiveness. But, you know, it's good to have in your heart love and the importance of forgiveness and the knowledge that we don't always reach it because we're not perfect.
That's right, because we're humans. We're not deities. And we're human beings.
That's right, and that's what gives us the humbleness. But it's a good thing to have that in your heart, to forgive, to have that sense of forgiveness is what gives you that peace, right?
Yeah, well, it's freedom for you when you achieve it, isn't it?
Freedom.
Forgiveness is a gift you give yourself, basically. Mm. It's freedom for you. Yeah.
And it was given to us. Linda, that's Linda Wharton from the Health New Zealand Forum. Follow her on X. She is
NZ. Oh, sorry. The name of our group on X is NZ and the mRNA. So we're not called the Health Forum. We're NZ and the mRNA.
Isn't it funny? Because once you start following someone, it's like an email. You never even think of what it is. You just get them and you never think what the post is.
Yeah.
NZ mRNA.
No, NZ and the mRNA.
And the.
Yeah, and the mRNA. NZ
and the mRNA. Follow her. She's a total delight. Get along to one of her presentations. That's a huge privilege. And Linda, we wish you Godspeed in your travels back to the North Island. It's been wonderful having you visit. And we look forward to having you back on RCR because you have such a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of insight, and we feel your goodness coming through the airwaves.
Oh, thanks, Rodney. As always, absolute delight to be interviewed. And, well, not really interviewed. We just two mates sitting having a wee chat this morning. So thank you. I loved it.
You're on Rally Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. That was Linda Wharton from the Health Forum, but you follow her at NZ and the mRNA on X. Do follow her. Send me a text at 2057. Email me inbox at radleycheck.radio. We're truly blessed when we've been through tough times to have such wonderful people in our world. And as Linda says, not just her being wonderful, but all the people that are coming out to look after her and support us. And we know who they are. We meet them daily. RCR listeners, Voices for Freedom supporters, people that haven't taken the jab or people that have taken the jab realized it was a mistake and who what we call awake to it. Our eyes are open. And we are wonderful people. Because we're prepared to stand up and be counted. Well, Linda is a true leader of us. Thank you for listening.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.